Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon. I am your sleep-deprived host, Shane Bacon. Staying up late, getting up early, doubling up on more coffee than I've probably had in a five-day stretch in a long, long time, and it was all worth it. What an open. People don't understand how incredible it was to see those guys do what they did. And first and foremost, one of the points I wanted to make, Royal Troon didn't play that easy. I mean, if you look at the numbers, 17 players finished under par. 11 shots back was third place. You know, we're going to look at these numbers, 20 under, 63 from both Stenson and Phil Mickelson over the week, and think, man, that golf course must have played super easy. It didn't. The wind blew hard on Friday. It blew hard on Saturday. It was tough. The conditions were tough. 11 is nearly impossible. I'm not even sure I could finish that hole, much less hit a tee shot without my nerves taking complete control of me. And these guys made it seem a little easier than it was. But it wasn't this easy. This golf course is very, very tough. It's one of the sternest tests in Lynx golf. And yet, Henrik Stenson, a robot, and Phil Mickelson playing on, I don't know, adrenaline, hope, understanding that he's 2 weeks away from a golf course he's comfortable with was impressive. It was the coolest one-on-one battle that I've watched in my career covering this. I mean, we've seen plenty of guys go at it in major championships, but really just two names. There was no need for NBC to show anybody else, and they didn't. They showed the two leaders, as they should have. That was the story. That was the key. A guy that never won a major, trying to do it. A guy that historically is trying to jump into a list of one-name players like Sarazen and Tiger and Jack and be, you know, a six-major guy, a top-10 player of all time, and Phil Mickelson doing something that he hadn't done since this championship 3 years ago. And he was right there. He played well enough to win a whole bunch of British Opens except this one. So it was truly an incredible week. I just loved that final round. It was fun, shot for shot. You know, you don't see two players that locked in a big event like this very much. I mean, we see great play, great golf, good golf shots, but to be that locked in, Stenson to shoot that 63 with two bogeys, Phil Mickelson to not make a bogey all Sunday, it was a lot of fun. Quick note, if you want to get in touch with us, follow us on Twitter. I'm at Shane Bake, and the podcast is at the Clubhouse Pod. Use the hashtag ClubhouseSB if you have questions, comments, etc. And if you have a longer email, just want to chat or whatever, I respond to them. Send us an email, theclubhousewithshanebacon@gmail.com. Coming up a little bit later, ESPN, Scott Van Pelt. First time he said he's been on this side of the pond in 20 years. He said he's missed a couple of opens in that stretch, but Justin Leonard at Royal Troon was his first one working for ESPN and ABC. So he got to experience like we did, you know, on the couch, watching it, getting up early, brewing the coffee, and it was a good chat. Talked to him about Stenson and Phil and where they rank and his experience over there covering opens over the years. So it was cool of him. I know he's a busy guy with the Midnight Eastern Sports Center he does every day. So he got up early and chatted for 20, 25 minutes. It was great stuff. But first, you know, just a few points I wanted to hit on. Personally, Henrik Stenson to begin with, and I will be completely honest here, I kept waiting for him to stumble. And I'm sure I'm not alone. We've seen players get in these positions plenty of times. We've seen Henrik Stenson get in these positions plenty of times, not just in majors, but in some bigger events. You know, you think back to the FedEx Cup playoffs last year. I kept waiting for a loose swing or a bad tee shot or something in a pot bunker, and it just didn't happen. I mean, he played pretty much flawless golf the whole week, and especially over the last 12 holes. I mean, he didn't miss a golf shot, and he was hitting golf shots in the very middle of the green. He would hit them, and he would just look away. I mean, he knew where it was going. It was never offline. I mean, you hear tour players say that Henrik Stenson hits his irons as good as anybody out there. And of course, you think Dustin, you think Rory, you think Sergio, but Stenson was so locked in. And this is a guy, I mean, he's got so much talent that if the putter is hot, he's going to be in contention with a chance to win. And that's what we saw this weekend, was this guy's putter was on fire. He was making putts dead center. Really, the only putt he didn't make dead center was the one on 18 when it was all said and done, the one that went on the back door. I got to say this too, a little rude, Mr. Stenson. Phil Mickelson still dealing with that scar tissue from that putt on Thursday for 63. Same green, similar length, and that thing looks dead center and breaks away at the end. Stenson's really didn't look like it ever had a chance of going in, and backdoors in for the 63. I was thinking, man, Phil must have hated watching that, knowing that not only is he not winning this championship, but now he doesn't even have the course record, and he has to sit here and see a guy make history when Phil had a chance to shoot that 62. Three wood on the final hole he hit. Now, Henrik Stenson didn't make many decisions that I was wondering about or questioning. He pulls that three wood. All I could think in my head as the club gets pulled out of the bag was Adam Scott in 2012 at the Open. You know, he needed a par on the 18th, if you remember. He made three bogeys on 15, 16, 17, has that big lead, gets to 18. Now he's tied with Ernie Els, who is already done. He's over there on his phone and needs a par to get in a playoff with Ernie. Birdie obviously wins, hits a questionable tee shot and finds a bunker. He has to pitch out sideways, hits a great shot up there on the green, misses the putt. Makes the bogey, Ernie goes on to win. That ball's rolling. I'm sitting there going, he just Adam Scotted himself. Kept rolling, kept rolling, kept rolling on these fast, firm fairways, and just comes up a bit short. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure he was pumped up. Trust me. I'm sure adrenaline was a main factor there. I'm sure he didn't think he'd hit that 308 or 309 or however far it rolled. But I would have gone with the iron. I think I would have gone like 3 or 4 iron and just said, even if I make bogey, let's make Phil make birdie to tie me, especially on such a tough hole as 18. But it was an incredibly impressive week. We have another name added to a list of first-time major winners that I've talked about this a lot. It's the era of the first-time major winner. I think the talent pool is so deep. You know, you're going to see guys like Jordan Spieth, the Rory, maybe go on a run and win one or two in a season. But I just think there's so many players out there that are so talented that you're going to see a ton of these names. So I went back and looked, and I wanted to just do a little list. So since 2009, our one-time current major winners include this list. I'm going to split them up into three categories. Then I'm going to say who I think has the chance to win the most majors or multiple majors from this list, because it's a long list. I mean, you know, I mentioned you have Rory win multiple. You've had Jordan Spieth go back-to-back. But there's a lot of players that have won one major that are great talents that have yet to win another one. So since 2009... Lucas Glover, Stuart Sink, Y.E. Yang, Graham McDowell, Louis Oosthuizen, Darren Clark, Keegan Bradley, Webb Simpson, Adam Scott, Justin Rose, Jason Duffner, Jason Day, Danny Willett, Dustin Johnson, and now Henrik. All three major winners this year. Of course, all first-time major winners here in 2016, kind of changing the narrative as we expected Jordan to win another one or Rory to win another one. And they just show you, you know, the talent pool is deep. So, first group. First, but never again. And, you know, this is not negative. Just pointing out the facts. The names here that I think have won a major on that list but won't win another one. And I think they're pretty obvious. Y.E. Yang, Darren Clark, Stuart Sink, Lucas Glover. I think you're safe to put there. You could talk yourself into any other name on that list. Those may be the ones you probably wouldn't talk yourself into. And would be, I would say it would be a surprise if they got themselves back into a conversation of a major. Second, it's possible, but unlikely. These are names that if they won another major, you'd go, hey, good player, great player, you know, did something to change their career. I mean, Martin Keimer is a name that, you know, wins Whistling Straits and then wins Pinehurst, and you're going, yeah, he's a top-notch type of player, but if he'd only won one, you wouldn't have been surprised. Graham McDowell, Keegan, Webb Simpson, Jason Duffner on that list. Very solid players. They have the random hot weeks throughout the year. You know, they're not the consistent 15 top 10s in 25 starts kind of players, but they could get hot. It would be hard to see them get hot and have it happen randomly on one of the 4 weeks out of the year that the majors happen. Finally, yes, they will most definitely win another major championship, no doubt in my mind. Oosthuizen, Scott, Rose, Day, Willett, Dustin, Henrik. The one name on the list that I kind of went back and forth on between the group before and now is Danny Willett. 28 years old, only has one other top 10 in a major. But, you know, he's a really good talent, and he's a guy that plays a ton of European golf. I could see him getting in contention in a few Open Championships and winning a Claret Jug. I mean, you know, all of these guys have a really good chance at winning one. I think Henrik Stenson was the type of player we expected to win a major over the years. It took him maybe a little bit longer to do it, but, you know, that tends to happen. Phil's career, he was in contention a whole bunch and couldn't pull it out, finally gets one. And has been on a roll ever since, winning majors a little bit later in his career than maybe some of the guys we see do it early and struggle late. But of those names, the ones that I think going to win the most, and I'd say probably a fairly obvious choice, number one player in the world, Jason Day, have him just a bit over Dustin. I would say Jason Day probably ends with, you know, 3-4 majors, and Dustin probably ends with 2 or 3. So they'll be pretty close. But, you know, those are the names. So you've got a long list of players since 09 that have only won the one major, and it'll be interesting to see in 4 or 5 years of that list which players were able to capitalize on it, get more comfortable in that moment and win another one, and which players that will just end their career with one major, which is, hey, listen, it's better than not doing one. Speaking of not winning majors, my pick, Sergio Garcia, a good week. Still didn't get it. I was bummed out. Love me some Sergio. Thought he played solid. I think he's got a chance at Baltusrol as well. Speaking of Baltusrol and close calls, got to talk a little Phil Mickelson. I mean, this guy's career is strange. It's strange for this point. He's a Hall of Famer. He is a multiple major winner. He is one major away from the career Grand Slam. He has done so much in his career that's been so impressive. And yet, when he looks back on his career, if he's looking at it negatively, looking back on your career, if you're Phil Mickelson, you have to be thinking, how did I get so close so many times and not win? And when I say that, you know, we joke, a lot of us online on social media joke about these guys that are kind of backdoor top 10 players, you know, the guys that aren't really in the conversation, shoot a final round with no pressure and jump into eighth or sixth. And that helps the stats. You know, when we're doing stats and writing stories and looking at picks, you're looking and go, oh, he finished high for eighth. Maybe you forget he shot a 67 on Sunday when it didn't matter, when he was 2 hours before the leaders went out. So I looked over Phil Mickelson's career, and what's so insane about it is every major he finished second in, he had a chance to win it 11 times. I mean, this is a guy that's been so close so many times, but rarely has it been one of those instances where he was way out of the conversation. You know, somebody was blowing the field away. So I went back and looked, and this is a little history bump. So this is kind of looking back over Phil's career and all of his second place finishes and what happened for him to finish second. So we start in 1999, of course, U.S. Open, Payne Stewart makes that bomb on 18 to beat Phil by one. He famously grabs him by the face, but Phil was right there the whole time, had a lot of chances to win that one. Young Phil Mickelson, that was very early in the career, but still right there all the way to the 72nd hole and just get nips at the end. 2001 PGA Championship, David Thom sets a then-scoring record, 265, that Stenson just eclipsed of all majors. That's all four majors combined. 265 was the low number up until this weekend. Who did he beat by one shot? Phil Mickelson. And how did he do it? He had to lay up on 18 in Atlanta, pitch it on the green, and make a putt. He's right there again. Has a really good chance at one. Gets beat by a historic performance by David Thoms. 2002 U.S. Open. Well, Tiger beats him by three at Bethpage. Phil played solid that last day. Tiger wasn't going to get beat. That was really, really Tiger prime times. But still, got within three of a guy that could go down as the best player of all time, playing a very difficult golf course, and Phil was right there as well. 04, oh man, 04 was tough, the 04 U.S. Open. Phil birdies 15 and 16 at Shinnecock, takes the lead over Goosen, then he three putts from 5 feet on 17 for double when the green was a little bit beyond playable. Only two players finished under par that entire week. Phil Mickelson was one of them, of course. Retief Goosen wins his second U.S. Open. 06 U.S. Open, I mean, does he need explaining? He's on AT&T, makes par at Wingfoot, he wins, he hits it a million miles left. The questionable call, of course, the second shot when he tried to punch it under the tree. I'm such an idiot. Maybe the most Phil Mickelson moment of all the majors up until that point. 09, an underrated disappointment for Phil at that 09 U.S. Open. You know, if you remember, he eagled 13 to tie Lucas Glover for the lead. He missed a short putt on 14, three putts on 15, misses another one on 16, bogey 17, does all that and still only loses by two shots to Lucas Glover again at Bethpage. 2011 Open, Darren Clark wins that championship at 5-under. Phil got to 6-under after shooting 30 on the front and birdie in 10 at St. George's, but he made four bogeys over his last eight holes. He loses that one by three, gets to the number he needed to get to win that, but then kind of oil started leaking out there at the Open in 11. 2013 U.S. Open, final group of Marion. He doubles 3 and 5. Still has a chance. Couldn't convert a birdie after his eagle on 10. And, of course, he bogeyed 18 when he was trying to make birdie on that impossible par 4. If he birdies it, he ties Justin Rose. He made a bogey after kind of getting aggressive with the chip shot there. But still, lost that by two right there until the end. 2014 PGA, a late bogey on 16, playing alongside Ricky Fowler, chasing Rory McIlroy. It hurt his chances. He did birdie 18, but it wasn't enough. Of course, the controversial playing in the dark, group plays up, kind of a weird finish at that PGA, but finished second alone again to Rory McIlroy. he ran into some heavy hitters in these majors, if you haven't been able to tell. And then 15, of course, made a late charge. Nobody was going to catch Jordan Spieth in 2015. He finished in second alone at 14 under par, again losing to someone that made history. If you remember, 18 under tied the scoring record at the Masters. Jordan Spieth was 19 under and bogeyed 18, or it would have been the scoring record at the time. 14 under par would have won all but six Masters. So that number would have won all but six of the Masters played in history, yet he loses to a red-hot Jordan Spieth. And then, of course, 2016, Stenson shoots 20 under. Phil opens with a 63, closes with a 65. Final total of 17 under par would have won all but four British Opens, including this one. And this championship has been around since 1860. So if you think about Phil, and I mean, again, this is a guy that, and Scott Van Pelt brings this up. I mean, he is a quote-unquote lovable loser who makes a gob of money and is one of the most famous players of all time and one of the most famous golfers of all time and most successful business-wise for sure. And you think about him, and we still look at him as this kind of lovable loser, and I think that's because the list is insane. All those second-place finishes and so close so many times. So I just wanted to go over that because I think it's interesting to look at that when you think about Phil career-wise. You know, me and Chris Solomon and some of the guys were chatting a little bit about Phil being a top-10 player. I said he is. And when you look at that in particular and you see Tiger beat him a lot, and Jordan Spieth sets a career record, and he loses to Goosen, who was kind of a U.S. Open horse for a while, you know, in spectacular fashion. Justin Rose, a great player, you know, beats him at Marion. I think when you look at that list of players that have taken him down, Rory McIlroy, you know, you think Phil's put himself in conversation so many times and lost to players that just simply outplayed him or just came in clutch at the end. So incredible performance from Henrik Stenson. A great week from Phil Mickelson. Baltusrol's in 2 weeks, the site of his lone PGA Championship win. So he has to be pulling positives and fired up about that. And on that note, my last point from this week, and of course, if you follow me on Twitter, which, you know what, I hope you do. If you don't, you should. You get $7 sent to you from Twitter every time you follow me. Gorse the Horse, the real winner of the week. If you never saw Gorse first, I'm really sorry. It would have made your weekend better. But just right of 11, Gorse the Horse, taking in the action on that tough par 4. Majestic, strong, large. The cameras didn't give him as much love as I would have appreciated, but Gorse was over there, a big, big part, really the mascot of this Open Championship, if you will, and one of my favorites. If the owners of Gorse the Horse are listening, first, thanks so much. That's really nice of you guys. And second, you could send me some snaps of Gorse. That'd be great. Big fan of the horse. Really made my weekend. I had a lot of fun with it on Twitter. If you don't know what I'm talking about, you just got to go to my Twitter, @ShaneBacon, and scroll down, because I think about 70% of my tweets over the weekend were about this silly horse. That's that. Great week. I appreciate everybody interacting. I do think the Open Championship is the best Twitter week of the entire year. I think it's because it's early. People are up. They're on their computers. They're wiping their eyes. They get the coffee, and they just really enjoy interacting along with the championship. I do think it helps as well when there's only two players you have to follow. You know, with Stenson and Phil really being the only story, J.B. Holmes finished in 11 shots back. There wasn't really much interaction with the other players on Sunday especially. So I really just thanks everybody for making it a lot of fun. Up next, Scott Van Pelt of ESPN chats. First time in 20 years he was on this side of the pond enjoying it like we did. And he's also a bit sleep deprived. So Scott Van Pelt next. And we welcome into the clubhouse Scott Van Pelt. You can watch his always entertaining SportsCenter at midnight Eastern on ESPN. Follow him on Twitter @NotTheFakeSVP. And first, not across the pond for the first time in many, many years. How was it getting to wake up and watch the Open on your TV?
Well, it was great, and it was awful. It was great to see my pal Mike Tirico, and it was awful because I kept expecting him to throw it to me. At 17, I kept waiting to get my chance to say something. The NBC crew, obviously, they've been doing golf a long time, so it felt familiar. And I love the event. It's my favorite tournament of the season. So I ended up getting up early. I ended up staying up later than I intended to. It ruined my sleep for the week. But I mean, you know, I love the Open, so I dealt with it and I watched a ton of golf.
Yeah, that was kind of the point. I'm West Coast, so I battle with the, do you stay up throughout the night? Do you take a couple hours nap? And I'm like you, the sleep schedule is completely screwed up. But, you know, for people that have never been to Scotland, that have never really experienced not just that golf, but really the atmosphere around it. Compare it to not only just to the Masters, but to what we experience here in America, like on PGA Tour regular events, because it really is the most unique, and it's not even close, golf tournament the entire year.
Completely. I've often said, and it's the way I do things. Russillo used to be the bane of his existence. I have a difficult time sort of picking between things. I always say Augusta National is my favorite place to spend a week, but the Open's my favorite tournament, and that's just because I can't pick one or the other. But Scotland, in particular, when the Open is there, and it's the home of the game. It's not cliche. It's the truth. It's where it was. It was born. It's in the soul of the country. It's in the ground. It's in the atmosphere. The feeling is different. The towns, obviously, they're older. They look different. There's very little that feels familiar, and yet the big giant yellow leaderboards, the setup on the 18th, the incredible theater that is that last hole, the Lynx golf, which again is. It feels different, and yet is there things about the game and the courses that are inherent in anything that we play. I just look at it this way, Shane. They've been playing that for that prize longer than any other in the game, and they invented the sport. And it's okay as Americans to be proud of things that we think we do well, and we do a lot well in golf. But it's theirs, and they made it up. So you're allowed every now and then to just tip your cap or bow your head, however you feel is appropriate, to what golf there is. And if you've not experienced it yet and you love the game, then you must see it there to understand what it is you and I are talking about. Otherwise, if you're dismissive of it and you've never been, then I don't know. That'd be like saying, oh, that restaurant's not that good. Have you eaten there? Well, no. Well, then how the hell do you know? Go have a bite. See what you think.
It's just the Yelp reviewer mindset. They're going to hate something internally in a restaurant, even if they've never been. I was going to say one of your better points, one of the better points I saw on Twitter, I'm not trying to blow smoke up, but you said before the final round, you said in perfect weather, a 63 is out there talking about Royal Troon. You said in this type of weather when the wind was really blowing, 73 is a good score. I'm assuming you didn't think a 63 would be out there on Sunday, a la Henrik Stenson. When you were watching what was unfolding in that final round, were you just waiting for him to stumble, or did you just kind of see a guy that was robotically locked in?
No, it seemed evident to me that he and Phil had differentiated themselves in this week to such a degree that I said out loud to no one. I'm sitting there by myself. My son is asleep. He's 5 months old and wouldn't have known what I was saying anyway. But I said out loud when he had the putt to take the lead on, and now I'm 14. I said he's going to make this putt, and then he does, and then he's making just bomb after bomb. I didn't think he'd miss with a 3-wood because he just didn't. And I guess a 63 would have been ambitious, but I didn't think anything was beyond what he or Phil were capable of doing, because again, they were so clearly better than anyone else that I'd be lying if I said I wasn't rooting for 62 just because I thought it would have been interesting to hear how Johnny Miller would have described it. And he could have, because, I mean, he actually had a better birdie putt on 17 than he did on 18. But it was an astonishing performance from both he and Phil.
Well, and what was so crazy, and, you know, I mean, I wasn't around, you know, for Nicholas Watson at Turnberry, but, I mean, I've watched the highlights and all that good stuff, but, you know, we've never really seen this in this era of golf, two guys that are blowing the field out. You know, you can look at Bob May and Tiger. I guess you pretty much yep. put Tiger with any of kind of the quote-unquote no-names he beat in majors. But, you know, to see two guys play a tough golf course in tough conditions better than everybody else, it was match play. But I thought it was exciting because I wasn't sure who was going to win till the end. Well, really till, he, like you said, probably till about the birdie on 14. But just watching those guys go back and forth and play off of each other was just impressive because they didn't really miss a golf shot in the final round. Phil Mickelson definitely didn't miss a golf shot. It was just Henrik Stenson who, of all the clubs in his bag he's battled with over his career, had a hot putter that wouldn't miss.
True. And it's the Turnberry's low-hanging fruit, and I understand why anyone that would have been covering the event on television would have naturally gone to that. Where I would push back is simply who the characters were. I mean, Watson and Nicklaus and I mean, I was a little kid, so I don't recall the specifics of the number of majors they had at the time in 77. But I mean, you know, with the benefit of history on our side, knowing where they ended up finishing their careers, you're talking about two all-time greats. And it was the same level of genius. It was the same differentiation where they were, you know, double digits clear of the field. So that's the, you know, the comparative that makes sense. Obviously, Henrik Nevers won a major. Phil fits the part because he's a Hall of Famer and one of the greatest of his era. But whatever, whoever they were in terms of being Nicklaus or Watson, which ones were Jack, which ones Tom, they were as good as those two were in Turnberry in comparison to the field, where they were on an island by themselves. And the fact that they played together on both Saturday and Sunday and were truly their own flight was a lot of fun to watch. Because look, there were a lot of big names that were playing really well. And it felt a bit like, you know, the old Tiger at the peak of his powers, where he was, you know, 10 shots clear. And it was like, well, who's going to finish first in the other tournament? Well, this was those two enjoying each other's company, and everybody else was left to fight it out for, you know, for third. But, I mean, I think the coolest thing, Shane, is if you're going to break through and win your first major, to do it in the manner in which Stenson did is unlike anything I can ever recall. To go out and shoot that low around face-to-face with a Hall of Fame player who's won this event and who shoots 65 and to beat him, you cannot have a more emphatic statement of what you're capable of at your best. I mean, that's as good as we've seen and ever in our lifetime.
Yeah, and you make a great point, and it is something I was going to ask you. I can't, and I've racked my brain over the last 12 hours trying to think of this, but I'm not sure we've ever seen a performance from somebody trying to win a first major like this. So many times they'll kind of limp into it or get a big lead and maybe drop a couple shots on the way in. But a guy to go out there and play like that, I mean, I think he made 11 birdies his last 20 holes.
Yeah, there's nobody like this, Shane. I mean, I and you made the point by way of bringing me on about how, you know, how many years it's been and going over there. I think of Ben Curtis, and this is not meant to be disparaging in any way, shape, or form to Ben, but that's the way that I most typically associate a first-time winner in a major. As like, there's a Wyatt Yang who stares Tiger down and is somehow better than him. Which was at that time, I mean, that was like beating Tyson, wasn't it? It demystified a guy, but Curtis won by posting a score. It felt like 2 hours before the last group got to the 18th, but he posted a score, made a putt on 18 that at the time he couldn't have possibly known what it meant. And then everyone else just sort of melted away. And at the end, he's the man holding the clear jug, and he earned it. But it's not like he went out in the final group having to hold on to the lead and, again, being face-to-face with a player of Mickelson's caliber and then watching that man shoot 65 and dusting him, you know? I mean, it's just there's nothing I can think of that's similar. And so that's why I think anybody that enjoys the game has spent the time watching it and in the time since just trying to fill in the blanks with something where you can say it's kind of like this. No, it's actually kind of like nothing. It's not like anything else, which is what makes it, I think, so much fun.
Yeah, the only thing I can come up with in kind of my years of covering golf is Rich Beam beating Tiger and Tiger telling Steve Williams, if I birdie the last four holes, I'll win this thing. And then in typical Tiger fashion, he birdies the last four holes and Beam holds him off. And to me, it's you're running into the buzzsaw that is Tiger Woods at his best and you're able to hold him off. That's something not many people have kind of come up with, and you brought up Wai Yang as well, but you know, Phil was as locked in as I've seen Phil in probably 3 years, and Stenson, it didn't even knock Stenson off the tracks even one time.
No, and that's what I've been kind of trying to come up with in thinking of the Phil, just put yourself in Phil's shoes and think, you know, how gutting is that to walk away from at 46, a major where you know you've beaten every other person in the field by at minimum 11, and compared to say the number one player in the world and Day, and you beat him by 18. You beat Spieth by more. You beat McIlroy by whatever. What did McIlroy finish? Four. Whatever it is, you beat 1, 2, 3 in the world by like a combined 40 shots. And unfortunately for you, this was the one week where there was just one person who was even more superhuman than you were. And so, given what Phil's trophy case looks like and the fact that he's won this before, can you lean on, well, I was that good for that week and I'm still quite capable? You certainly could, because it's true. But I think you also, I would have to think that that would be trumped by, yeah, but I didn't win. And majors are so bloody hard to win that if you shoot 17 under, you open in 63, close in 65, and are under par combined in the two middle rounds, and you don't win, then those golf gods he was talking about when he missed that putt on Thursday in round one, I mean, they seem to have a different ending to the story in mind than Phil as champion golfer. And that would have to be haunting.
Yeah, I was going to ask a similar question just about Phil Mickelson. And does he take any positives away from this? Because he played great golf and he beat everybody. He lapped the field besides one guy. But now you're looking at it going, I got snake bitten again. I ran into somebody playing like that again.
Yeah, but you'd have to reasonably take the good out, because there's only good. That, look, he didn't do one thing wrong. He didn't have a Phil moment like Wingfoot where he hit it off a beer tent. You know, he didn't do anything wrong. There was one guy who shot the lowest major championship 4-day total. All you can do is shrug and tip your cap, and that's what he did. I believe Phil ultimately will become the oldest guy to win at Augusta. I think he'll go there much like Fred Couples, with a chance to compete into his 50s. And so I could see that happening again for him. This week shows that his days of being a competitive force in major championship golf are far from finished. I mean, it wasn't like he was close. I mean, he beat the crap out of every other person. So all those things he's not convincing himself that that's the case. That's the case. You know, he doesn't have to squint real hard to see the positives. But again, I'd have to think that you know, the fact that it wasn't enough would really, really be gutting, because he's a human being, man.
Yeah, I saw a stat today from Golf News Net said lowest 72-hole total scores in majors, 264 from Henrik this year, 265 was David Toms and 0-1 at the PGA, and Phil finished second to both of them. So he's been right there twice to the best scores ever in majors. Is Phil good? I mean, first of all, I think Phil Mickelson's a top 10 player of all time. I just, the way he's played on the PGA Tour and consistently and winning as an amateur and being a factor really for 25, 30 years. But will Phil look back at his major career and say, I should have won 12 majors? Or is he going to look back just happy with what he's done?
I think that Thursday's round is the perfect metaphor for golf. It was a round where he shot 63 and he walked off the course pissed off because he should have shot 62. And he absolutely should have. What happened on that putt was robbery. And I think that round in many ways is a metaphor for Phil's major championship career. I mean, 63 is as well as anyone shot in a major championship ever. And yet it didn't feel satisfying. And Phil's got a pile of majors, and yet he'd be right to look around and think, remember specific individual moments, whether it's pain at Pinehurst or whether it's what Phil did at Wingfoot or whether it's, you know, beating the field by double digits, except for that Henrik Stenson fella. Sure, I think he'll like every coach that I've ever talked to, Shane, they can take you immediately to the losses in specific detail. And the winds kind of blur into a happy little fog that the specifics aren't that memorable to them, because there are far more wins than there are losses. You know, Phil's got a bunch, but I think the way he lost, or the way he was beaten in this case, he was beaten here. Those will certainly keep him awake, I would think.
Well, the good news for Phil Mickelson is 2 weeks from now, the PGA Championship goes back to Baltusrol. And the last time it was at Baltusrol, Phil Mickelson was slamming his 3-wood on the plaque and making birdie on the last hole to win. So at least he's got that going for him.
He was awesome. The golf was awesome. Those two, you know, whether it's Turnberry, and it doesn't have to be Turnberry. It was Troon in 16, and it was so bloody good, man. And it was so much fun to watch. And I salute them both. I think for Henrik to win and bust through the way he does, is, as I said earlier, it's just so demonstrative of what he's capable of. And for Phil to show that he's still got this in the bag at 46 was spectacular. And it was, I think you and I love the game, obviously, but I think it brought a lot of folks along for the ride that are just sports fans that were like, man, this is pretty cool to watch. And that's what the game desperately needs.
Yeah, and it is. I said this on Twitter earlier in the week, and people kind of questioned what I said, but I still believe that of all the players in golf not named Tiger Woods, when Phil Mickelson is in contention at a major, it just makes it better for whatever reason. Do you agree, or would you rather see the young guys, the Spieth, Rory, and Jason Day, you know, slugging it out at a tough golf course like Kiowa or something?
I think that for the game, the younger guys are better just because they represent a chance for the game to be in their hands for decades. In Phil's case, we're talking about a more finite number of years. But I would agree with you in that what Phil does, I believe, is brings along the casual fan, because somehow, and this is a hell of a trick that Phil's managed to pull off, is that there's a bit of an everyman quality to him that people identify or relate or pull for him. I mean, you don't have one thing in common with Phil Mickelson, okay? He's got, I don't mean you, I mean
oh, you mean me too, trust me.
Well, I mean the collective us. We don't have one thing in common with Phil Mickelson in terms of his ungodly ability and competitive fire and his willingness to take on, you know, the challenge. None of us have anything in common with him, and yet he's made a lot of folks feel like they're Phil. They identify with him, and so you're right. I think Phil brings more people to the tent than Day, Spieth, Rory, because in some ways those guys morph into the other, don't they? They have similar skill sets. I mean, Spieth doesn't hit it as long as the other, but you know, their physical stature, they're kind of the same. They're all, you know, they're handsome and they, you know, carry themselves in a certain way. I mean, I didn't have any problem with Rory this week and what he had to say. Rory's unflinchingly honest, and sometimes it puts him in a corner, but each one of these guys I think is likable. They represent the game as well as you could hope. But Phil's that guy that makes people feel like they're him, even though you're not.
Yeah, and these young guys, it seems like it's kind of hard to attach yourself to just one, because as you mentioned, you know, you have the Rory run and he wins two majors in 14 and it was great. And you have the Spieth run and he wins two majors, and then Jason Day does what he does at the PGA. But, you know, this is going to be I've said this a lot, but this is going to be the generation of the one-time major winner. You know, you're going to see the Danny Willits and the Jason Duffners and the Keegan Bradleys, and every now and again somebody's going to hop in and do that. And I'm just wondering if we're ever going to see one of these young guys win 6, 7, 8 majors, because it's just going to be so tough to do it considering how deep these fields are.
I think it'll happen. I think the problem for this sport is that we look at it with our nose close to the painting. We tend to view the picture, you know, from a very, very sort of small window of time, and it's a sport that lends itself to decades. I mean, you know, look at the principles in Turnberry. That was 77 that Watson and Nicklaus did that. You know, Nicklaus still was leaving marks on the wall, you know, basically a decade later at Augusta in 86. And hell, Tom Watson in 2009. That's 20. I can't even do the math. That's 30. That's almost 30 years. It's more than 30 years later. And he could have won and should have won at Turnberry. So I guess what I'm saying is that given the benefit of time, I think Rory will get to a pile of majors. I think Jason Day will and can as well. But I get your point that, you know, every time you show up, you're going to have to deal with that little immediate peer group, and then you're also going to have to deal with, oh, there's Dustin Johnson over there. Oh, there's Adam Scott over there. Oh, you know, Phil's still banging around at 46 with shots to win. And, you know, the Willetts of the world are capable, if they have that one great nine-hole stretch, of posting and winning. All these factors make the game feel different. But I do think what's different about golf than any other sport, because it's obviously true, is that you're still able to, at, you know, the old age of 46, you know, still contend. And so over time, somebody will have a pile of these things, and they're going to be hard to get, but somebody will get them.
And a couple more questions. I know you got to go. One question is, when you would go cover opens, how many rounds of golf would mm-hmm. you get in a week?
You know what? I stopped bringing my clubs because it was always this terror, the terrifying Aer Lingus. Oh, I'm sorry, we can't find your clubs. And you think, oh, great, that's cool. How about my bag with the underwear in it? That happened one year where we were in St. Andrews without clothes for days. So I stopped bringing clubs. So I would occasionally play. But the truth of the matter, man, when we go over there, once the event started, we were on our butts in a booth for like 14 hours. And even though you could play well into 10 o'clock at night, I stopped playing, a ton of golf when I went. But over the years, certainly we would play, and that it was just whether it was a course that was the name you'd know or just some course around town. It was always such a treat to try to play that links golf. And to see some old boy that would be behind you. I got to tell you this story. I ramble so much, but we played a course and I couldn't tell you the name of it for $1 million. And there was this old boy behind us. He had to be 80, and he has on the Tam O'Shanter, right? He's got the Hogan, he's got a pull cart, and his swing is like Mr. Haverkamp from Caddyshack. And it's just, you know, it's like a 9-piece swing, and it's this rickety old thing, and it doesn't ever get more than head high. And my hand to God, he hit it stone dead inside 3 feet, like three different holes, and hit it, you know, middle of the green on three or four other holes. And so when we finished ahead of him, we just stopped just to watch him play in. And as he walks by, we sort of gave him like some applause and, you know, just nodded and smiled. And he smiled at us. We said, that was fantastic. You know, that was great. He never broke stride. He put his fingers, you know, his thumb and his index finger to the tip of his cap, and he just says, it's not the first time I've played here, and kept on walking. And it was just like, what a great line, because it was basically, he's just saying, I know how to play links golf, but he said it in such a charming way and without, you know, even a hint of arrogance, and he just kept on walking. We're like, that guy just hit it to inside 3 feet, three holes, and none of us did it once. And, you know, links golf is a mystery. If you've never played it, it's hard to even try. You play American golf, you play it through the air, and you're 40 yards over holes.
Well, and I always tell people, you made a great point there when you said, you know, you play the St. Andrews and you play Kings Barnes and you go play Royal Troon and Turnberry, but getting lost on a golf course you've never heard of, that's a brilliant golf course like London Links or Lady Banks, and you're like, why is nobody writing about this place? It's amazing. It's just so much fun to get lost on those links golf courses.
You played North Berwick?
I have played North Berwick.
Yeah, there's another one, and there's a course like that around every corner, and it's in whether it's a name you know or whether it's some course that you can't quite recall years later. Just being out there, and especially if it's at 9:30 at night, you're thinking, man, we could probably play another two or three holes. And then 6 holes later, you're still playing. You're like, my God, does it ever get dark here?
I teed off at St. Andrews last year, 6:35 p.m. tee time. I was nervous I'd get it in, but I did. I got all 18 in. It was a bit dark at the home hole, but it was still exciting.
It was dark when Watson finished last year too. You know, I mean, you make your own time. If you can, you squeeze it in, you squeeze it in.
Well, I appreciate you taking time. I love the show. Make sure you check out Scott Van Pelt Sports Center, midnight Eastern on ESPN. And I just wanted to say, is the handicap going down since the new gig, or is it going up?
I have not turned in a score this year. The gig isn't as bad as having two itty bitty kids at this late stage of my life. It's great joy, obviously, but I don't feel great about telling the wifey, hey, I'm going to split for 4 hours and go play 18, you know, three or four times a week, which is what you need to do. So honest to God, I haven't turned in a score this year. So, I played a little bit here and there, but it's, this is my way of saying that I'm not very good at golf right now, Shane. It's what I'm trying to say.
I totally understand. You got great golf, though. You got to go play. I mean, like Wampanoag and all those places are so much fun to play. I always enjoy that area.
Oh, yeah. I hit a lot of golf. I hit more balls than I do go out and play 18. But I enjoy your work. I appreciate you giving me the chance to come on here and just babble incoherently about what we saw yesterday. It's hard for me to be super precise with the language. I'm astonished at what I saw. It was a joy to watch. If you enjoy the game,
hey, I appreciate it. Anytime, man. Thanks so much.
All right, brother. Be good.
And that'll do it for this clubhouse. Great clubhouse. I really appreciate Scott Van Pelt jumping on. A great dude. Always an interesting conversation. Make sure you check out his Sports Center's Midnight Eastern on ESPN. They're always entertaining. He talks a little gambling, which I always enjoy. You can get in touch with us again at Shane Bacon at the Clubhouse Pod. If you love the podcast, do us a favor. Go on iTunes, write a review, subscribe. It helps us out a lot. We appreciate it. One last note, Top Golf Tour is up and running. You can jump on the website, tour.topgolf.com, and register you and a friend or a brother or a sister or anything to try to compete and get to Vegas in November for $50,000. It's just a cool event. I'm really excited about being a part of it, so I just wanted to make that note there. Tour.topgolf.com. We'll have more info coming from that. A lot of USGA events left throughout the year, so make sure you get your DVR set on those Fox channels. We got the PGA in a couple of weeks. I'm really excited, and we'll have more. If not this week, we'll have more coming up. We've got some fun guests upcoming. So we appreciate you listening and subscribing. Have a great week. Try not to make too many bogeys.